And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice. Hello, and welcome to our program, Lifestyle Improvement. This is your host, Rebecca. Today, we have with us Virginia Morris. Ms. Morris is an award-winning journalist and the author of the books Talking About Death, which came out in 2004, and the 1996 best-selling book on the subject of how to care for aging parents, which also won the Books for a Better Life Award, was declared by the Wall Street Journal as the best guide on the subject and was called the Caregiver's Bible by the ABC World News. Ms. Morris has been featured by many media outlets and, just as important, was a caregiver to her parents during their final years. Her book, How to Care for Aging Parents, is now in the third edition and could be a one-stop resource for all your medical, financial, housing, and emotional-related questions. Ms. Morris is joining us today from her home in New York to tell us more about her book and how it can be of help for all the caregivers out there. Hello, Virginia. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, how are you?
So let me start by asking, what was the moment when you knew you needed to write the book, How to Care for Aging Parents?
Well, I don't think there was so much a moment as much as an evolution. I was a medical journalist. At the time, I was not taking care of my parents and just saw a lot of people who were going through this. This is back in 1990 when there was not only no internet, there were actually no books on this topic. And as it evolved, I ended up over the years taking care of my parents too. But I'm actually glad I came to it without the baggage of my own experience, really, as a journalist interviewing experts and people who were going through it to see what the issues were and what kind of help they wanted.
So what is it about your experience that you think, because you just mentioned that you're glad you came into it without having the experience part behind it. How do you think that made a difference?
It just makes it more real to you. But I think when you've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of caregivers, you're sort of living it and breathing it constantly anyway. I think the message that you'll hear from any expert on the subject who is also a caregiver is, you know, nobody does it perfectly. We all mess up. We all think we should have done it differently. You know, I can tell people, you know, get rid of the guilt. Don't feel so guilty. But hey, I felt guilty too. You know, we all muddle along. We all do the best that we can do. And there are no magic wands. There's no perfect answer. So I think that's the main thing that experience brings to you is this is not some neat, clean package. I can't give somebody 10 instructions that, gee, just follow these and it's all going to go swimmingly.
So what do you think your parents taught you that you were able to put into this book to make a difference?
Well, as I say, I wrote most of the first edition while they were still alive and healthy. My father died while I was finishing up the first edition. I think I've learned many, many things, but I think with this third edition that just came out, I really thought, oh, what more could I possibly learn? I had been taking care of my mother forever. I had been doing this for 20 years. One thing I learned was that you need to kind of get off the treadmill sometimes. I think as caregivers, we're just running as fast as we can to make sure this is done and that is done. And they get to this appointment and should they be on that medication? And what is this new symptom? And they better get to this doctor's appointment. And you're so worried about anything happening to them and just keeping them alive that you just get running. And sometimes you just have to stop and say, you know what, let's just go have some fun today. And, you know, I ended up doing that several times with my mom, much to the dismay of various nurses and professionals, and just said, sorry, we're not doing that today. And we went off and sat in the car and had ice cream and looked at the birds. And, you know, I just, when it's all over, that's the stuff you're going to remember. Those are the memories you're going to cherish. So I try to encourage people to just take a deep breath. Remember what this is about. Yes, you want to keep them alive at all costs, but you don't want to forget to let them live.
So agree with that. Those special moments that you really, those are the ones you treasure. Those moments when you make that connection. And yeah, maybe that would mean that you make a change for that day because routine is really important for us. But definitely those moments are those that you can keep forever with you. Thank you for sharing that. In your book, and also in your website, careforagingparents.com, you talk about 10 survival tips for caregivers. Would you like to expand on that and share them with our listeners today?
Well, I think as soon as you think you should be getting involved in your parents' life, you want to just really assess the situation. What's going on here? What are the real issues? What are the problems? What do we need to do? Organize the troops, organize your life, try to figure out how you're going to make a plan for your parent. I think one of the most important things that I can tell people is to plan ahead. And this is something I talk a lot about. Wherever somebody is in this, and you know, there's people who kind of, oh, my parents are fine, I don't need to worry about it yet. And then there's people who are deep in the trenches, really in the daily care of a parent. And there's people who are nearing the end and maybe they've called hospice and there's not a lot of time left. So wherever anybody is in this process, they should be thinking about the next step, about what might come. Because typically caregivers are just responding to one crisis after the next and just dealing with the problem as it comes up. And it's a really exhausting way to deal with life. It doesn't get your parent the best care. It means a lot of headaches for you. So planning ahead at any point in this process is important. And I would start by saying it's never too soon to get involved in your parents' life because people always say to me, oh, you know, she's healthy. I don't have to worry about her. Well, that's the time to start the conversations. And if somebody's older and has multiple diseases, then maybe you're talking about end of life care and what makes you happy now and what should we be working on now? So all through the spectrum, you want to be having conversations with your parent ideally, but if that's not possible, then maybe your siblings or other caregivers involved in this. And if you're doing it completely on your own, well, you need to get help, but you should be even sitting down with yourself and saying, okay, what do I need to be thinking about? And that means talking to your parent about housing. You know, mom, if you couldn't stay where you are right now, where would you want to live? What would we do? Legal issues, getting legal documents, financial issues, making sure that your parent can pay for long-term care, that they're, you know, that their finances are simplified, that there's hopefully gently figure out a way to have some sort of oversight because the elderly are very vulnerable to scams and abuse. Talking about end-of-life care, as I mentioned, medical care, even talking about just simplistic, okay, if I call and you don't answer the phone for 2 days, who do I call next? You know, I need the phone number of a neighbor. I need to make sure there's a key hidden where that neighbor could get in and make sure you're okay. You know, if you're at work 500 miles away and your dad calls you and his speech is all slurred and he's not making sense, you need to have some idea of what to do. So I think planning ahead is one of the most important things, not the most exciting thing, but one of the most important things that I can tell caregivers. It will save them a lot of anguish. And I just want to add, it's not one conversation, it's multiple. So you start maybe easy, just listening to them, but keep it going as the situation changes, as things evolve, keep that door open. I know people feel very stressed about doing that, and it's really hard to have those conversations. But I really, in my experience, people are so relieved to get stuff out in the open and to start that ball rolling.
Absolutely. And like you said, those conversations can be very challenging because you as a potential caregiver may see some signs that concern you, but your parents may not be ready for that at all and may not see anything going wrong and may not be prepared or ready to really sit down and have those talks with you. What do you advise in that situation?
I think it's really hard to open the door to any of these conversations. And there's many ways to do it. You can be direct, mom, I think we need to talk about this. Maybe I think one way that's really good, like you want to talk about finances and gee, do they have enough money? Sometimes if you phrase it as a question of advice, like I've been trying to save for my retirement, how did you start? What did you think was enough? Do you feel you have enough going forward? I understand long-term care is expensive. You know, those kinds of questions where you're just asking him for advice and it doesn't feel that threatening. Talk about somebody else's situation. However you open this door, the most important thing you can do is really listen.
This is your host, Rebecca, and now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuke Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified NUCA practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50 point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how NUCA Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
I think it's really hard to open the door to any of these conversations, and there's many ways to do it. You can be direct, mom, I think we need to talk about this. Maybe I think one way that's really good, like you want to talk about finances and gee, do they have enough money? Sometimes if you phrase it as a question of advice, like I've been trying to save for my retirement, how did you start? What did you think was enough? Do you feel you have enough going forward? I understand long-term care is expensive. You know, those kinds of questions where you're just asking him for advice and it doesn't feel that threatening. Talk about somebody else's situation. However you open this door, the most important thing you can do is really listen. So don't come to your parents with, Carol and I have been discussing this and here's what we think you need to do, because they'll just slam the door and they really won't want to talk to you anymore. Don't come with an armload of brochures and forms to fill out. Just ask questions in the beginning. You know, what worries you? What are you concerned about? How can I be helpful? Even if you have some pressing thing, just start by listening to them because you may learn something and they're going to be much more apt to listen to you once you've been listening to them.
That's great advice. On that same subject, many caregivers talk about the challenges that are related to the changing roles when caring for their aging parents. You have advice in your book about this issue. Would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people say, oh, well, I'm the parent now. And I advise people to really try to get away from that mindset. We all think it at times. It feels that way when you're buying baby monitors and dealing with incontinence and tantrums and disagreements and worrying about somebody's falling down or not, it feels like raising a kid. But it's so important, it's a little hard to explain, but it's so important that you always remember this is an adult who is sick. This is not a child. This is not your child. First of all, they're not going to get better and grow and learn the way a child does, so you'll just frustrate yourself. Second of all, they have a lifetime of experiences and opinions and viewpoints and needs that aren't those of a child. And they need our respect even when they've lost their ability to remember, even when they can't walk, even when they're very sick. They need a certain degree of respect from us. So I think if we can try very hard to remember, this is an adult with a disability, it will help us deal better and it will help them maintain some respect. So yes, the roles shift. It's sort of a whole different role, but it's definitely the role of two adults, one caring for the other one. And we need to behave like adults and, you know, try to avoid that urge to just nag at our parents and tell them what to do. And no, you can't do that. You have to be in your room and I want you to stop. You know, that kind of nagging can be so divisive.
Well said, well said. And I think that that's probably very welcome advice. What are some of the steps to consider in order to keep a healthy mindset once you are a caregiver?
Oh boy, that's a big one. I could talk for a long time on that one. Well, backing up a little bit, I think that caregivers, people caring particularly for parents, don't often realize how much pressure they're under and how stressed they really are. And it's not just the day-to-day work that makes it stressful. So yes, you're busy. You know, you've got appointments and doctors to manage and pills to manage and maybe a health aide and financial issues and insurance forms. And it's overwhelming, the work that's involved. But I think what really undoes caregivers is the emotional part of it. So even if you're not providing the hands-on care, even if you're far away, you're in knots. You know, you're worried constantly. I mean, there isn't a moment you're not worrying. And even when everything seems okay, you know any moment it won't be. So you're always kind of on call. And I think the guilt can be overwhelming. I'm not there. I wasn't this enough. I'm not that enough. I'm not providing enough. He needs more. You know, we feel guilty, not just for what we do or don't do, we feel guilty for what we think. You know, if you're thinking, oh my God, when he's dead, this will be so much easier for me. Oh, how did I think that? I'm an awful person. You know, it just, we feel so bad about everything. And then there's resentment, and then you're dealing with siblings, and that brings up all sorts of old angers and frustrations and old roles. And there's grief because this person, you're losing them. And whether or not it was a wonderful relationship, there is loss. Maybe loss of some hope of what that relationship could have been. Maybe the loss of a wonderful relationship. It's all grief. So the emotional part of it, I think a lot of caregivers don't realize until it's over how stressful it was. So it's really, really important. I mean, I said number one, plan ahead, but number two, and no less important, take care of yourself. You need to take a break, get away, see friends. And I know that people often think, oh, I don't have time for myself now. I'm so busy. But you cannot be a good caregiver if you're exhausted and irritable and crying all the time and want to hit somebody. So you have got to take time for yourself. It will make you actually, ironically, a better caregiver. So take time out for yourself. Understand that it is not your job to take care of every single part of your parent's life. Figure out what can I do and what can't I do, and accept that you can't do everything. Get help. Get the community, use community services, get siblings involved, you know, get rid of the guilt and stop trying to do things that you know are futile. Like, you know, my brother should be more involved. Well, he's not. So you need to just let that out of your life and take it off your plate. And I think just take a deep breath a few times a day and put your shoulders down and say, you know what, I'm doing a really good job. But I think that really getting away, taking time off is so important for caregivers, and I cannot urge them enough to do it.
Thank you so much. Those are very insightful words, and they definitely come from a lot of experience and from a lot of heart and from a lot of thoughtfulness and thoughtful moments that have really brought you to that place. Now, in your book, you mention that there's a difference in the challenges that male caregivers have to address versus female caregivers. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, just in the time that I have been involved in this topic, so 25 years, things have changed dramatically. When I started, this was really a woman's job for the most part. There were very few men caring for a parent. And when they care, and I don't mean when they care, because of course they care, but when they're involved in care, it typically is more like I'll handle the finances or I'll, you know, make appointments, but it's not the hands-on, day-to-day, messy stuff. Today, many more men are involved day-to-day, and I give them a lot of credit for that. And, you know, this is somewhat anecdotal, but I think men in general, and I don't mean to pinpoint the sexes, but are better at delegating. You know, here's a problem, here's a solution. Who am I going to get? Who am I going to call? How am I going to fix this? And women often just take it all on themselves and they don't reach out for help as quickly as men will. I think women are better at talking about it, finding support groups, talking to friends about it, kind of unloading the emotional part of it. And I think often men just kind of keep that inside and think they can handle it. And I have many times interviewed men who start talking and literally end up sobbing because it's the first time they've really talked to anybody about it. So it's an interesting dynamic how we kind of come to it differently. I also think if you're a man caring for a mother, that's sometimes different. You know, which sex you're caring for can also change it. So sometimes, for example, maybe a man does not feel comfortable giving his mother a bath or his father a bath. I think, you know, girls have been taking care of their dads in a certain way. They maybe tend to cook for them, their special thing, and that's not maybe so comfortable for a son. It's interesting. The other thing that I see happening a lot, and people actually sometimes call it the brother from California syndrome, or if you live in California, it's the brother from Massachusetts syndrome, but it's girls who are taking, or daughters who are taking care of a parent and a brother, or any sibling, but tends to be a brother from far away, flies in for the weekend, says, this is how this should be run. I can't believe you're doing it this way. Let me tell you how this should be done. Gives a bunch of orders. And I just have heard so many women just going, who does he think he is? And I just advise people, like, take a deep breath. Let it go in one ear and out the other. Here's your hat. What's your hurry? You know, goodbye. Try not to drown in that, because that can be such a painful thing when you have been there day in and day out. So it's interesting, the male-female thing. It's interesting, the sibling dynamic in all of this too. So, you know, often there's a primary caregiver who's there much more often, and then there's sort of the secondary siblings who come in and they care terribly, but they don't realize quite what you're handling, and they don't realize how overwhelming and stressful this job can be. So they think they're coming in with all these great ideas for you. They don't realize it's actually kind of insulting and hurtful. And I think sometimes the primary caregiver also feels the added pressure of, so in addition to all the other pressures they're feeling, it's, you know, maybe they're thinking I'm not doing it right. So, again, I am a huge believer in communication. So as far as I'm concerned, put it out on the table, get together, have a beer, talk about it. You know, this is hard for me. I'm doing the best I can do. Here's how you could really help. Or it hurts my feelings when you come in and tell me how I'm doing it wrong. I understand that you have your views, but I am the one doing this. So just be gentle when you know, I think just putting it out there, because people just don't understand. And I often interview several siblings and they'll all, you know, kind of show that same dynamic of, you know, it's their parent. They do believe they know what's best.
Absolutely. And you know, that's funny because I was about to ask you about communication with family members and siblings and the best advice that you could give. So you definitely touched on that.
Yeah. Whatever the subject is, I am a believer in just talk about it.
You talked a little bit about the healthy mindset, and then you were just now touching upon the issue of the difficulty of the job. And however, you also give advice about how to take care of your body to keep a healthy body, specifically because this is a stressful job that has a lot of chronic stress connected to it. So like you mentioned, it's not just the one day. It's this continuing thing that you have to deal with on a daily basis. Talk to us about that a little bit more and how to deal with being able to keep more of a healthy body and keeping the stress in context. And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you so much for joining us today here on Lifestyle Improvement for part one of our interview with Virginia Morris. Ms. Morris is an award-winning journalist and the author of the book Talking About Death, which came out in 2004, and the 1996 best-selling book on the subject of how to care for aging parents, which also won the Books for a Better Life Award, was declared by the Wall Street Journal as the best guide on the subject and was called the Caregiver's Bible by the ABC World News. Thanks again for tuning in to Lifestyle Improvement today. And don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning at 7:30 for part two of our interview with Virginia Morris.